I'm here.
All right.
It's gonna happen, man.
It's going to happen. It's been a long time in the
It
making.
sure has.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, all things considered, with everything that we've got going on in the world. I'm doing quite well, actually. How
Well,
about
that's
you?
good. I'm doing all right. It's weird.
Yeah,
But
for sure.
I'm going to work still, so I mean there's that, but everybody's keeping their distance, so it's like a everybody works 6 feet from each other and don't go in the conference room, and it's very bizarre. Might as well be
Yeah,
working at home. I just can't.
we were told to work from home, unless you have to be in the office. So there's very few people that have to be in there, and I work in a kind of an office complex. It's one tower and 2 8-story buildings alongside of it. So in 3 blocks, we basically have 4,000 people, and we were all ordering work from home equipment because our company furnishes us with 2 monitors, docking stations, stuff like that. So I had ordered mine last week before the edict came out that we needed to work from home to try and get ahead of it. And myself and about 2,500 other people thought the same thing. So I ended up getting the call yesterday that my equipment was ready for pickup today. And walking into the building, it was the first time in a week that I had been in the building, and it was the weirdest thing because it was just completely empty. There was like 5 people where there's normally about 500 to 600 people milling about in our lobby and kind of main general, I guess, passing areas, and it was nothing. I took a picture of it because I'd never seen it so empty. So it
Even
was weird,
driving to
but
work is weird. I don't know what kind of
yeah.
traffic you have, but it's like a ghost town. It's almost like one of the like you're it's like Walking Dead when you're like Rick Grimes and you come out of the hospital and you're like, what the hell just happened?
Where'd everybody go?
Where'd everybody go? Yeah.
Yep. It is kind of weird, but we're making do. I'm very, very fortunate that I've got my mother-in-law's retired. My mother is actually retiring in 1 week, and my wife works 4 days a week. So with our 6-year-old who's in kindergarten, all the schools are closed and we're getting curriculum that we have to teach her. So I've had to take, it'll be tomorrow will be the second day where I'm trying to split being an employee and a teacher as well as a parent, but that's better than a good handful of the people that I work closely with. A lot of them are stuck doing it every day. So we're very, very fortunate in that we can make it work so that I can still focus the lion's share of my time on work. But it's weird. This is something that I hope we only kind of do once in a lifetime or less than that,
Yeah,
maybe.
I hope it's not a seasonal thing like the flu.
Jeez. For
I
sure.
hope it gets more under control anyway, because
Yeah.
it's sure knocking out a lot of people.
Yeah, Wisconsin, we've been a little behind the curve, I think. So we just started seeing some exponential growth in the last probably 24 to 48 hours of cases. But for the longest time, it was hovering around 3 to 5, and then it was 9, and I think we kind of hit 2 days ago, we jumped up by 20. Yesterday, we jumped up by about 35. And today, I think we jumped up another 40. So I think we're starting to see the beginning of the uptick.
It definitely spreads fast. Like it's just, but we're not here to talk about the virus.
No, because neither one of us are epidemiologists.
That's right. We don't know any of that crap. Nor would I want to. I mean, just props to all the healthcare workers and stuff that have to deal with
Yes.
that on a daily basis, and then have to go
Right.
home to their families and isolate themselves.
Correct.
So it's all rough on them and firefighters and paramedics and everybody.
It's not a good time to be in any of those professions just from the increased stress and fatigue. So hats off to any of you out there that are in those roles.
That's right. Well, this is Mike M's Collector's Corner, and we're back. And I have Eric Helwig with me. Is that how you pronounce your last name? I always on my phone I have Eric Cowabunga.
Both pronunciations work, either Hellwig or Cowabunga. They both work just fine.
Okay. Yeah, I always put Eric Cowabunga on everything, because that's what I know you from. Eric owns a store in Wakanawawak. I don't know if I said that right, Wisconsin. I wanted to visit it, but it was a little too far for a vacation thing. But someday I will visit.
Yeah, we'll get you out. Yep, we're in Oconomowoc, and we're about, depending on traffic, anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours from Chicago. So it's a little bit too far if you don't have a vehicle, and you're traveling to Chicago, but definitely doable if you have a day to buzz up and hang out. I know we've had a few folks that have gone to C2E2 and come up, spent a few hours, and it's been a good time. But we'll always entertain anyone who wants to come up. We're still open. So there's still time.
Yeah, the best of the rest. They always
That's
go.
right.
They've gone up there twice already.
Yep.
Yeah, for me it was like, it's like going to see my brother in Boulder. It's that long of a ride.
And we're
And
not family, so.
yeah. But you do have a big store, and I don't know. It sounded like a treasure trove of dollar comics that they went through, which I would have loved to go through that, because to me, what somebody thinks is junk, I find gold in it. Like, I just love everything that's just history and weird. I just dig it.
Yeah, and one of the things that we tell people, because we get a lot of folks that'll come in and say, well, why are these all $1 and these are all priced over here? And we say it's not really so much content based when you're getting to like $1 books versus $2.99, $3.99. It really has to do with the value of the book. And so a lot of the books that are in those dollar bins, sure, there's plenty of obscure stuff, but there's also a lot of late 80s through 90s stuff that had very high print runs. And so the content is great. It's just there's so much out there that, you can't ask a premium for something that there's a glut of on the market. So we always tell people, we have $50 to $60 book long boxes that are out at any given time and anywhere from 10 to 30 more in the back room. There's gold in those, depending on what you consider gold. If you're looking for
Yeah.
the first appearance of Deadpool, you're not going to find it in our dollar bins.
That's
But
right.
there's tons of great, 90s DC and lots of Marvel and some really good early Valiant that's in there. So it's all there. It's just, again, we have to price it based on the market value, not necessarily on the quote unquote quality of the book.
Yeah. That's what when I go, I might as well just take a U-Haul truck and just fill in a bunch of long boxes.
We can just get a pallet and we'll just ship it freight.
I had just read some of the stuff on the last podcast that I got out of your box. Some of the
Oh,
obscure
sure.
stuff and the Jetsons and Tom and Jerry and man, that Jetsons comic was good. Holy mackerel, was it good. It
Well,
felt
if we get
like I
more of
was
those in, I'll let you know.
watching the cartoon. It was
Yeah,
just,
there's.
and plus that kind of stuff is like needed in this time. Like, I don't know, it's good to read something light before bed, but because of the darkness that's around us, and you don't want to
Yeah.
read something dark before bed. I don't read a
No,
Hill
I
House
agree.
book before bed.
So Punisher Max maybe isn't a good night story.
Yeah, it's not a good night story. Nor normally it would be, but it's just like you just need to decompress now and just try
Yep,
to think good
absolutely.
thoughts. But
I
anyway,
agree.
you're here to talk about your history with comics.
Yeah.
And you're our first shop owner, which is really cool. I've had lots of people, lots of collectors, including Bob Bretall, who owns the world record. And I learn a lot from these about different things, but I like to start off with like, why comics? Like, why did you get into comics? When did you get into comics?
Sure. So, for those of you who have listened to the Cowcast, you probably heard a little bit of this already. But for those of you that haven't, I went in pretty heavy. pretty quick. I came into comics as we look at the medium from a superhero lens quite late. I came into it in about 2010, shortly before the New 52. I did have comics growing up, but I grew up in the country, did not have cable television. Obviously, we didn't have the internet or at least the World Wide Web when I was a kid, and my parents didn't know about comic book stores. So what I grew up with was the funnies in the Sunday paper, which is what my grandmother used to always call them, so I call them the funnies, even though it said comics on the top. And that was things like Garfield, Foxtrot, High and Lois, Family Circus, Prince Valiant, those types of things. So I grew up with those. I would always get the little Garfield paperback, Scholastic book offerings. I would get all of the Calvin and Hobbes, The Far Side. So that was what I grew up with as a kid. I did get to see things like the Batman animated series, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, on TV, but I didn't really associate those necessarily with a comic book. Again, not because my parents were trying to hide it from me, it's just they weren't aware and they didn't know. And I grew up in the country outside of a relatively small city. In fact, there's more people that work in the building that I'm in than live in the city today that I grew up going to school.
But
So,
just out of curiosity, where was there even a place where you could get comics, like a drugstore? No, yeah, there had to be around that time where it was spinner rack, right? I mean, you're much younger than me, but
Yeah, so I'm a mid-80s child. I was born in 86.
yeah.
But one of the bigger online retailers, or at least for a while, Westfield Comics, is about 25, 30 minutes from where I grew up. And Capital Distribution was in Madison, which is where Westfield is. So I grew up close to it all, just completely oblivious to what happened. So it was there. I just didn't know about it. When I was a kid, like I said, I got most of my stuff out of the newspaper. My familiarity was with the newspaper, and I got a lot of it through Scholastic. And then once I got into college, I met my wife, and she had been exposed to a lot more comic-based medium. She and her brother grew up in a city. They had cable television as an option. Her brother is 7 years younger than her and just watched all of that stuff, all the animated shows, everything. So he was really big into it. And just on a whim one day, we went into, believe it or not, a Westfield comic store. I think I was a sophomore in college at the time, something like that. But we went in and we happened to just start looking around, and I snagged a few things. I'd always been a fan of Batman. I've always been a huge fan of the thought of Batman, this guy who built himself up to be this amazing superhero, the world's greatest detective, could solve anything and do anything without having quote unquote special powers. So I was always drawn to him. So I grabbed a few Batman issues, and my wife was a Green Lantern fan, so we grabbed some Green Lantern issues. And from there, it just kind of started. And we both of us read comics, we both read manga, and we just kind of fell into a rhythm of going every week to grab a couple new books here and a couple new books there. And I was working in Madison at the time in my first job, and as life happens, you kind of shift and move on. And so we moved closer to Milwaukee, where we live now, in the Milwaukee area, and it wasn't feasible for me to go to Westfield anymore. So I ended up finding this shop that was like 10 minutes from the apartment that we were in Oconomowoc, and it was called Calvin. And I was like, oh, perfect, cool. So I went, set up my pull list. It was the first time I had a pull list. I felt like a very upstanding gentleman in the community, having a pull list, letting my retailer know exactly what I wanted so he wouldn't have to fret when I came in and it wasn't there. And a couple of years after that, all of a sudden, he told me as I was checking out, oh, yeah, hey, I'm going to be closing. I was like, wait, what? And he said, yeah, well, it's just time. I've got kids that are getting ready to go to college and, whatever, and time to move on. And I was kind of bummed, and one thing led to the other. James was also a customer at the store. Neither one of us had known each other prior to it. We met, I think, twice and pretty much made up our mind that we were going to do it and move ahead. And we've become incredibly close friends, having never known each other before that. And we run a comic store. So,
That's pretty
my
amazing.
story.
Like it's amazing from a couple of perspectives because you went into business with them. Like I thought you guys had a little more history.
No.
Like the history you had was the commonality is you loved to go to get comics and the shop was closing.
Yeah, and we're both business minded. James, the bulk of his career has been kind of in the goods and services and retail side of things, at multiple different levels, both from an actual sales perspective, but then also from a management and store, like large corporate store management perspective. And for me, I've always been in kind of a business management role in technology. So we just kind of started talking about things that we'd want to do. And he's 2 years older than me, and he's been doing the comics thing for, what did he say? So he's 35. He's been doing it for 27 years. His uncle started taking him to shows when he was 8, and James started setting up his own tables shortly thereafter, buying and selling and trading. So he's been doing this for over 25 years, and his knowledge is paramount to what we do. I'm there to bring efficiency. I'm there to do the mail order stuff. If there's a graphic we need made, I tend to do it. If there's marketing we want to do on Facebook, I do it. If anyone interacts on Twitter, you're unfortunately interacting with me for whatever that means. But we kind of found this really good place where within two meetings we knew where each person's strengths and weaknesses lied. We knew what we could and couldn't commit to. I, at the time, had a wife and was planning a family. James had just gotten married when we got the store. He still doesn't have any kids. I have a 6-year-old. And so that presents different challenges. He's an independent contractor outside of the store, so he can kind of set his own hours on his main job, whereas I have kind of that typical 9 to 5, so I'm not really in the store very often. So it's one of those things where we just looked at the totality of everything and we said, you know what, we can make a go of this. And we've done, I think, better than really anyone other than ourselves probably would have predicted we could do.
Yeah, you guys seem really knowledgeable, as far as like you know what the profit margins are, you know what you can sell. You know how variants are good to the business. I think you appreciate the speculator, because one thing,
It's one of those
let me
where you
talk
have to.
let me talk to you about the speculator. So when I was younger, much younger, like in college, I couldn't stand the speculator because that's when the speculator boom was happening, and this was before the market crash. And what drove me nuts is at the time I had a pool box, and I know the guy would put out books that he knew were going to be hot, and he'd pull them out of my pool box and sell them for a higher price, and it just like put this bad taste in my mouth, not because of speculators buying it, but because what was causing it was he was taking my books away from me. Now I have no problem with it, and I think the speculator market is really important from a couple perspectives. It generates excitement. They do a lot of hard work for you. Like, oh yeah, this movie might get optioned. Okay. Let them do the hard work. I don't have to do it.
Right.
I think they're like a necessary part of the market, and they've always been around since like Wizard. Like,
Right.
I mean, Wizard was a hype magazine. It would always say, "What's hot?" It's like going to the coverprice.com now and seeing the top 10. They had their own top 10, and they'd speculate for what was coming out in the future months. Yeah, so.
So speculators are, I think, well, you're not going to get rid of them. They are here to stay. And they are, I think, like you said, kind of a necessary part of the ecosystem. They do provide some positives and negatives, but I can come up with positives and negatives of anyone in the comic book industry. So I would say, their strong points are that they buy. Right. And in a day and age where you don't have returnability, where you have increased risk due to just the way that our industry works, things like that, if it's a question of, gee, a speculator is going to come in and buy the last 4 copies of a book off the shelf, of a book that I kind of questioned whether we could even do it, I'd rather have that happen than not. If it's, a case of a book that we've gone deep on for variants and someone comes in and buys a bunch, great. There are times where we have to limit what people buy if we know it's going to be a hot book that's, like the last Walking Dead. I think it was 192, 193, 194, 195, whatever those are. Those last ones were pretty hot no matter what they were. And we knew that there was a significant amount of people that came in and got one off of the shelf. That was just their buying pattern. So for the ones that we could recall by name, we had pulled a copy and set them behind the counter to have for them, even though it wasn't on a pull list for them. We just knew to account for them. And then we kind of limited everybody to one or two, depending on when they came. If it was Wednesday, we said one. If it was Saturday, okay, the limit's two. And we just did that to make sure everybody had a fair chance at it. There's certain things where it just, fine, if you're going to buy it, you're going to buy it. That's fine. And when people come in that are subscribers, like I said with The Walking Dead, we always try to make sure that we pull for them, or not subscribers, but regulars that grab off the shelf. It's our subscriber list is sacred, right? Like, we know Batman 89, You're the Villain, Hellraiser 3, Batman 90, and this new Nightwing 70. Like, Nightwing 70 A cover was selling for $50 on eBay Tuesday before they even hit shops. We could have been complete jerks and just said, second print's going to come. We'll just keep all of these and sell them. But that's not the way we operate. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, we want to make as much money as possible, but we wouldn't trade a loyal customer for a one-time $50 sale. Then the next time we put in a pre-order for Nightwing, instead of getting 15 copies of the A cover, we're going to get six because we screwed nine people over and we lost the subscribers. So for us, it's, you know, we honor that first, and then
they count, those, like I said, people that come in every Wednesday, you know, the Wednesday Warrior, the Weekly Warrior, you count on them, and you don't want them to leave. Like,
absolutely.
Even though they don't do a pre-order, you know they're going to be in there to pick up whatever's there. Because some people like to see what's there before they buy. But you,
right.
One thing that's important is you pay attention to them, and you know what they kind of are going after. Do you have a point of sale system where you scan on the barcode and you get to know what?
Yep.
Yeah, that's important, I think.
We do.
Because you don't have to go counting stuff. It's all in the system.
Right. So we use the Diamond Comic Suite software, and it handles all of our inventory for the in-store account that we have. So we have two accounts, one that handles in-store, which is the one that James manages, and one that does mail order, which is what I manage. The Comic Suite software is fairly expensive, and then there's like a $500 or $400 annual maintenance fee for it. So we just limit that to one license, and we kind of rock it for the store because that handles all of our people, subscribers. It has the order history and all of that. For me, I use a database setup that I can do queries on. And then when you place your orders in Diamond, if you use the Comic Suite software, you see it, and if you use just the straight up web interface like I do, you can see it where it'll show you what your previous issue's orders were. So if you say, let's just say I've got Batman, and I saw that last month I ordered 32 copies of Batman, and this month when I uploaded my order and I went through to check it, I had 14. Well, I can start to ask questions, you know, what the heck? Why? That's 18 copies different. Something's weird here. I have different patterns than what James does in the store because I lean pretty heavily on the FOC. So I get a lot of later orders that come in. So I just kind of have to be aware of that. But all in all, we do use every system we have to our availability to look at what our numbers are to try and make sure we maintain consistency. And in the store especially, it's all about making sure that you are prepared for whoever's walking in without going too deep. I mean, that's the danger. You go too deep too often and you've lost all your profit margin on a title or even a publisher.
How about your pull box, not your mail order, because they pay in advance, but like your pull box customers, are they pretty loyal, or have you been burned by pull box customers?
But I would say 85% are quite loyal. The ones that we've been burned by tend to be the folks that come in and they add like two or three titles to a pull list and then they just don't show up. So we have a pretty tight leash on the pull list side of things. If you're a customer who's been with us for a year or 2 years or longer, then we're going to give you a lot more flexibility and probably wait a couple months before we stop ordering for you. We'll reach out and call and just kind of see what's going on. And then for new customers, you know, it's two months roughly for your books to come in, and we'll let you know when the first set comes in. And then if after about a month we haven't even heard from you, let alone seen you, we usually just pull the plug right then and there. And typically at that point, you know, like I said, they've got two, three issues. We do have a couple of people that have come in and they've gone really heavy and put like 35 titles on their pull list. And so what we do for them is we kind of have a, depending on the size of it, either a 3 to 6 month period where we will put a deposit down on their credit card to cover our cost in on the books, so that if they flake on us, we're not completely lost. We're at break even. And if we sell anything that they had in their box, we're making money. And then it's kind of just a probationary period to make sure, because if you're going in that deep, it's a big investment for us. And so we want to make sure that you're bought in just as much.
Yeah. I went to one store here in Colorado that did that. They were like a sublet to Mile High. They weren't Mile High, but the order form that I got stuff had the Mile High letterhead and everything on it. So it was
sure.
Like they were like an extension of Mile High Comics. And they would pre-charge my credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no problem with it. I prefer that, actually, because I feel that if they do that, I haven't ever been burned with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you charge it, and then I'm going to get my book.
Right.
Like, it's
right.
Not like you're going to pull it out. And for me, getting books is like the most important thing. Like, I don't like to work for it. I'm the laziest person ever. Like, I was so glad that you did the TKO thing so I didn't have to do it. And then I was happy when you did the site comics.
And, oh, yeah, site comics, yeah.
Yeah. So, because those are wonderful. They have, like, a certain charm to it. And I'm a huge, like, Franz and DeFalco fan. And some of them have that vibe, like,
mm-hmm.
that just superhero vibe from that era. And I love that. So, like, I think you go out of your way, because there's different paradigms now. Like, I think there's a lot of exploring. Like, back in the day, it was Future Comics with Michelini and Layton, I think. I can't remember all the people that did it. But they went outside of Diamond to do it. And now you see more of them trying to do this.
Yeah. And it's each instance is a little different in how it is executed. And yeah, you should try and get Darren on sometime. He's on the Comic Book Page Slack channel from Sick Comics, and just kind of talk to him. But I think his approach is really kind of novel, and that charm you talked about. I mean, this is a Hollywood guy, essentially. This is a TV guy that's doing comics, and kind of the whole premise that he's put behind it is, if you look on the covers, they have a clock, and the clock tells you what time, if it was a television show, it would be on TV, and that's your guide to know what age range something is really suited for. So if it's, you know, around the dinner hour, it's prime time, all ages. As you get later at night, you know, okay, this is kind of for the big kids, and then you get like the 9 or 10 p.m., whatever it is, and it's like, okay, this is kind of more for the 17 plus, not that it's, you know, graphic with nudity and things like that. It's just the content is a little bit more adult. But I think all in all, it's an interesting approach. And I believe, if I understand correctly, one of his children is the main writer of one of the books, and she's under 15 years old. And he's doing it with her. It's kind of like a little pet passion project kind of thing. So really cool story, really cool stuff. But, yeah, as far as pulling in those kind of, I don't want to call them oddballs because they're not, but pulling in the folks who don't go through the normal distribution channel, it presents a few challenges. But, like, TKO and Sick Comics make it really easy. They just give me, here's the full list, and I can just kind of prep it and send it out the way that I want to. The new Valiant guys thing that they've got going on with Bad Idea, there's a lot of hoop jumping that I'm working on going through, and we just with the COVID-19 and everything kind of delayed some of those plans. So I'm hopeful that we can at least get their product in the store, but that one seems to have a little bit more of a barrier to entry for brick and mortar stores than maybe TKO or Sick Comics did.
Yeah, I wish they had like a their own storefront too. Like TKO at least.
Right.
The first round of TKO, I went through TKO. Sight Comics, it seems like you have to do the work. I have to go to my shop and say, "Can you please carry these?" And most of the shops will look at you like, "I can't sell this to anybody but you." So
Right.
why am I putting myself through this? But I like that you have that option. I mean, if I wasn't
Yeah.
so vested with Christina and Cameron because they've been so good to me, I would have moved just like some of my other friends have.
Yeah, and as far as the DCBS thing, you know what? There's a few things about comic consumers that I think are unique in the world. Number one, loyalties run deep, and it's not just at the publisher level. I mean, there's a reason why Marvel fans have been often called Marvel zombies. They're just incredibly loyal, probably the most loyal of any fandom in comics publishing. I mean, the early Valiant folks are incredibly loyal to that era of Valiant. Some of them carried through to the current era, but Marvel is what Marvel is. But the same thing goes with retailers. And what we found to be really interesting when we took over the store is there was a competitor that was about 15 minutes from us, and he was kind of just a grumpy, disgruntled person. I would put him in his mid to late 40s. He'd been doing it for 20 years or so, but he didn't have a passion anymore for comics. They didn't excite him. They just frustrated him. And people would complain all the time that, oh, there's missing books here and there. He doesn't even care when he puts them on the shelf. They're bent and creased. And we would say, well, just bring your pull list here. We get the same exact product, same exact time, and we'll make sure that it's all good. Yeah, I should do that. And then they just wouldn't. And when he went out of business, half of those customers that we had talked to, they stopped in once or twice and they never brought their pull list to us. And so we figured, oh, they must have just gone online. And it was just a simple no. If their retailer was there that they liked or whatever that they went to, they were just going to keep going out of habit. But as soon as he was gone, they were out. And
Yeah,
James and I were
it's
just like, this is
strange.
the most ridiculous thing ever. But okay. Well, and then we started watching it. And it really, our mail order stuff, we only had a couple of customers. And our plan is to always try and grow, but it wasn't to like day one we're going to knock down DCBS. I have a goal in my mind of what I'd like to do, and we're getting there, but we really didn't kick in with the mail order stuff until DCBS made their move and people's packages had issues, and there was just some significant problems that were going on. And that was when we got our first influx of new customers, really, on the mail order thing. And again,
Well,
we make mistakes too.
I know you do, but the difference is, when I have an issue, I talk to a email, and yes, they email you, but I have to wait a week sometimes. But you're pretty on top of that, so
I try to be. I try to be.
yeah.
And most customers, if, well, all of them have my email. You're always email me straight. I'm on the Slack board for CCL and for comic book page. And for those that I know that aren't on those channels, if things come up, I just give them my phone, my direct cell phone, and just say, hey, give me a call when you're free and we'll talk about whatever the problem is. Because I find that it's a lot easier just to talk verbally. Because sometimes things get lost when you're trying to type it, punctuation, emphasis, whatever. And most of the time, what I get are questions on, hey, I ordered this and I haven't seen it yet. Do you know what's going on? And generally, it is always delayed. It's not coming out for another couple of weeks. Here's the anticipated date. No problem.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, maybe, I don't know, once every couple months, I get a someone will say, oh, hey, I got my box and I'm missing this comic. Oh crap, we hate it when that happens. We have a double check system that's supposed to catch that, but sometimes it's me doing it, as I'm transitioning things to the shipping program, the manifest versus, what's there misses, and that's my fault. But we try and take care of it as soon as possible. Most customers are like, I'll just put it in the next box. We've got a couple of them that, in the past, like if I miss a book or two, they're like, well, I was kind of hoping I could have it. Is it possible to get it? Well, yeah, it's my mistake. I'm gonna fix that. So most of the time, things are easily remedied. Sometimes they take a little more work, but by and large, the customers that we have are fantastic, fantastic folks, and I love it.
Do you find that owning a store is taking some of the enjoyment out of your hobby, or are you still into the hobby just as much as you were when you didn't own a store?
I'm into it more than I ever was before, and I'm into it in a slightly different way. I think the way that we run our store is maybe a little bit more different than how a lot of people run their stores, and that's what really spurs me. So for us, it's not just new comics. We do new comics, vintage comics, we do, vinyl, board games, table gaming, retro video games. So we have a really wide array of products. Manga, we have like sci-fi paperbacks, stuff like that. So we have a pretty diverse range of products, which there's always something happening in all of those areas. And so you're always on the lookout for things. If there's a certain Japanese pressing that was really limited of a certain vinyl that you want to get, things like that where you're always excited. And then on top of it, we mix in a pretty healthy, up until this spring, a pretty healthy regimen of shows that we go to. So we've got the store. We typically would hit 3 to 4 shows a month as well. So there's a lot of different things going on for us, and we're always out there digging for the next, book that we can find. And I don't want to say flip because it's not like we're speculators flipping, but our next wall book or our next great Bronze Age collection that we got for 50 cents on the dollar, and they're $3 books that are going to go fast because they're really great, title or run or whatever. So those types of things are really exciting. Every time a collection comes in, we still get excited when someone says, "I'd like to bring in a collection." So it's really just, if anything, it's ramped it up. The one thing that has ramped down is my ability to read. I don't have as much time to read, so I'm amassing a very nice retirement plan here that is a mixture of bagged and boarded, paperback, and hardcover. But I try and stay at least current on the content of the books that are coming out. We do watch all the spec sites to make sure we know what people are going to be asking for or looking for. And it helps us also to just key in and understand what the pulse of everything is. And I'm actually going to jump back at something you were talking about speculators earlier, and I had a point get into my head that I lost, and it came back to me. You had said, Wizard was kind of what you thought to be the beginning of the speculator market. And I would almost venture to say that the beginning of conventions was really the beginning of the speculator market, because that's really what you're doing anytime you buy low to sell high, right? Some people call it investing, some people call it speculating. Do you buy stocks or do you speculate on stocks? It's a little bit of both. So I think it's been inherent in the culture. It's just a different way of doing it than what had traditionally happened before.
Yeah, I think it's been around forever. But what I think changed it is Wizard made it a publication and it made it visible to everybody, whereas the other stuff might not have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think Overstreet did a little bit of that too, because you had the little text pieces that would, start to hint at what was moving and what wasn't. And as I look over at my 48th and 49th editions on the shelf, but yeah, and certainly technology now,
Yeah, well, the
today,
mark
day and
the,
age, has completely changed it.
yeah, I would always read those market reports. I don't know why, because I don't sell anything. I don't
Well,
know
it's
why,
good to
but
know what to not buy for the year.
I just get a kick out of it, and I don't really. It doesn't really. It's a time sink for me to pay, spend time on it because I buy everything, so. I don't know why I do it, but I think it was Wizard that sort of. Matter of fact, I'm buying a bunch of Wizards because the one thing I do regret, and I don't have many regrets, is I threw away my previews and I threw away my Wizards because as soon as I'd get them and read them, I thought it was a magazine. I didn't treat it like a comic. And the one
Right.
thing that I found out is those are historical gems. Like, I could go through a Capital City magazine and find all kinds of stuff that I didn't even know existed in that
Right.
year. And then the thing that's even more fascinating is you'll find out how much of it never came out. But I love that stuff. Like it just I love every aspect of comics. It's just an incredible hobby from everything. And you said you started kind of like from the TV, you know, you started seeing the Batman animated and that kind of stuff. But I did too, for the most part, because it was Super Friends that got me
Yep.
into it, you know, the Saturday morning. And I can't imagine if my dad never took me to the garbage dump that I would have not been into the hobby. But he would take me, and we'd find these boxes that were sealed of comic books that had the cover ripped off. And he said, "Check these out." And sure enough, I would take them, and I would, you know, I learned to read that way sort of when I was a kid. But yeah, I became addicted, and I never stopped because I can't.
Yeah, and I think today's day and age, kids have, I'm not going to say easier access to books because we know they're not on spinner racks and things like that, but just the breadth and depth of subject matters, styles, story types, is so much broader than it ever was that I think there's just so much out there for kids to find. I mean, we've got young kids, obviously, that are into the Raina Telgemeier stuff, and you've got kids that are trying out the Batman animated series trades that they've got from DC, and kids that want to go all the way back to the beginning of Spider-Man. I mean, it's really cool. They're lucky because they're at a time where they can consume all of this this medium that has kind of evolved before they've become aware of it, and now it's in this place where you've got Image, you've got Boom, you've got, you know, all these great independent publishers and small publishers. And so I'm envious of my daughter. She gets to come into this world with all of this, you know, here for her, the amazing history of superhero comics, you know, and those things that I mentioned, like Garfield and Foxtrot and High and Lois and Archie. But now with all these additional pieces, you know, that it's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun hobby, and
It is.
I think it was easier. You have the digital realm to compete with now, though, because people are realizing I can get it on demand.
Right.
So, you know, I tend to like that a lot for rereading. Like I have Marvel Unlimited and the DC app, but the only time I ever use it is like if I'm reading past midnight, or I want to revisit something for a podcast or something like that, then I can just pop it open and read it instead of going to search through many long boxes. But yeah, I love the comic book experience. So I do find you are an exception to the rule, because a lot of us have tried to get our spouses into comic books, and it sounds like you started off and it was already there, which is kind of unique. Like for a while, I had my wife reading Vertigo. Like she really got into Brian Wood's DMZ. And she was reading Fables, but it seemed like she lost interest as soon as like Fables went away. Like after that, Vertigo kind of went in a different direction. That's when she sort of lost interest, but she used to like to read that stuff. But that was it.
Yeah. I mean, if she was into DMZ, then she may be interested in something like The Massive.
Yeah, true, true. I mean, there's a lot of things that, like, I had to read the clock just recently, you know, because I found that image book more so the back matter, because I can't believe he went to a cancer conference and said, "Well, how do you weaponize cancer?" I mean, it's just like you stand out and do this, and just the climate that we're in right now. It's just like crazy, like the whole concept of that book. So I was like, Barb, you got to read this. And she's a biologist and studied like parasitology and all kinds of stuff. So anytime there's something odd like that, I'll have her read.
Yeah, that's my so my wife is a registered dietitian and works at a mental hospital for kids that have barriers to just being normal part of society, whether it's ADHD, Tourette's, contamination fears, things like that. And her whole job is to build a healthy association with food, and then obviously to make sure that while they're there, they're eating healthily and giving their body the nutrition they need. And so she's actually found lately a couple of things in the manga section that have really hooked her. Her mom is a retired from being a school teacher, was a high school biology teacher, and there's a series that ended that was called oh, what is it? Cells. Oh, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but there's a like an internal blood. It's like the white blood cells going through the body, and they're fighting different viruses like influenza and the cold and things like that. And it's just all about internal biology stuff. And so she got into that. And then there's another one that I think is called Comey Can't Communicate, and it's all about a boy who has some of the same kind of disorders that some of the kids that come into her hospital that she sees have. And so she's really been getting into that because it's something that she can associate with seeing kids have these same issues. And it's also a tool that these kids can read themselves if they want, and it can help them process their thoughts or be able to point to it and say, "This is me." And they have something that they can associate with. So there's a lot of cool things. My wife is a huge Wonder Woman fan. So, current run of Wonder Woman, she's kind of stepped away from, but she loves a lot of the older Wonder Woman. She's reading the Golden Age omnibuses right now.
Yeah, the
She's,
fourth volume was delayed for me, but it's coming.
I was gonna say, I think it came this week,
It did,
or was
but
supposed to, yeah.
for me they were shorted. You know how sometimes a
Oh.
shop gets shorted and says it'll be in a future release.
Yeah, that happens depending on what warehouse you're coming from.
Yeah.
So yeah, she reads those. She's a huge original Deadpool fan, so the Joe Kelly Deadpool loves it. I guess
Did
it's not
she
the original original, but
watch the Marston movie
I don't
that just
know.
came?
Good question.
You should have her watch that. It's incredible. I
Okay.
got I got to meet his grand great I know his granddaughter at one of the cons. I met Bill Finger's son's daughter, so I'd be her.
Yeah.
And I met them both. It had the Wonder Marston, and I thought that was incredible because I got to meet these women that their fathers had. I mean, they created so much, and I was just like incredible. But
Yeah.
that movie is incredible. If she can watch it, it is strange though because you probably have heard of Marston, almost like having two wives kind of thing, but
Yeah.
it's kind of unusual, but it respects it. Like I don't know, it just it's a really good movie. I bought the DVD because I had to own it, but on the same side, I buy every comic book thing that comes out. So
Maybe
that
we'll have to do a
movie
movie night and watch
blew
that.
my mind though. It's worth it. Because I'm a Wonder Woman fan, I got into Wonder Woman because of Super Friends and Linda Carter. I mean,
Right.
that was my gateway. And then I think in the late 70s, I just started buying Wonder Woman, and I haven't missed an issue since. So, yeah,
Yeah.
she's pretty incredible. We'll probably
But yeah, so.
not see the movie this year because of the
Right.
situation, but. I'm
Yeah, the way
looking
things are
forward
being
to it.
delayed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, my wife, I mean, and she reads other stuff too, but those are kind of the big things. And she's just, I don't want to say she's more open-minded than any other, because she's not. It's just that it's something that struck a chord with her. And I've had her read a few things. Like I love Why the Last Man. To
Oh,
me,
that's
it's
another
one of
thing that
the,
Barb liked.
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it's one of the finest comics ever written, with the way that it paces itself, and each issue has closure and then a cliffhanger. And so I had her read that, and she really enjoyed the first couple of hard covers. And then, like, I said, "Do you want the next one?" She's like, "Well, no, I've got to read all this other stuff," and she's never finished it. But
Yeah.
you know, she's pretty open-minded to whatever I'll throw at her. Like, I threw the first volume of the Hiro Kawata's Bat manga at her,
Yeah.
because I knew she liked the Batman animated series. And we would, when I was dating her and we'd be at her parents' house, it was always a thing on MeTV. I think it was Sunday afternoons or something like that, where they had the original Batman television series with all the really corny sound effects and everything. And we
Yeah.
used to love watching it. And those Bat mangas were basically made off of that television show. And she thought it was kind of funny, a little slice of time. It's pretty cool. So yeah.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. So what comics in the 2000s did you like? I mean, what attracted your attention? I know you said Batman got your attention initially, but what was some of those titles that you said, this is something I need to start getting?
Yeah, so I think for me, New 52 was really where it ramped up. And the Batman, the Dark Knight, and Detective Comics were three mainstays that I had to have. I had to have the Nightwing book. I don't know why, but I
The
saw the
Kyle
first
Higgins
cover.
one.
Yep, and I saw the first cover, and I was like, "This looks awesome. I have to get this." And I just fell in love with it. So those were absolutes on the pull list, and my wife wanted Green Lantern, so we got Green Lantern for her. And then I was kind of like, "Well, I should probably look at something." Oh, and Wonder Woman. And then I was like, "We should probably look at something in Marvel." And I will be honest, up until recently, I didn't really have much of an affinity for Superman and Spider-Man. It wasn't something that I really. I'll say this: with Superman, I never thought super highly of the character at the time when I was starting to look at comics, because it was kind of like, yeah, okay, so he's an alien with superpowers. Where's the challenge in that? Like I said, I really like the idea of Batman kind of growing himself and becoming the super person without having the superpowers. Same thing with kind of with Dick Grayson and Nightwing. He didn't have really any
Well,
superpowers other than, you know.
when you're at a street level, it's a different beast. And
Right.
sometimes it's harder to write somebody that has the ability to do so much. But there's been some really great Superman stories over the years. I mean,
Yeah, so
it's been pretty incredible.
I'll let you know how that's been faring here in a second. But I was looking at Marvel, and I said, you know, I want to pull something from Marvel to read as well. And I've always liked the idea of Captain America. My grandfather was a proud Marine that served in World War II. So the whole idea of Captain America was good. So I got that. And then, you know, similar in tone with Batman and Nightwing, I gravitated to Daredevil. And
And
that was
that's the
the.
one character that I think I was gonna say I'd be shocked if it, because he is street level and he doesn't have the abilities that a lot of them do. Yeah, he's got his radar sense and stuff, but he has something that he doesn't have, sight. So
Right. And that was the beginning of the Mark Waid Daredevil run. Was when I got on that. So those are the things that I started reading right off the bat and just fell in love with them. Absolutely loved them. I loved the medium. I loved the whole idea of just these amazing stories that kind of quote unquote went on without end, in the sense that there's just this long history. And so I started working my way backwards on Batman. I thought, okay, how can I work my way backwards to try and make sense out of this huge long backstory. Everybody knows the origin of Batman, but there's so much in between. So I just kind of started working my way back. And then shortly after my wife and I really got into buying comics, we decided for whatever reason, I don't honestly know why, but my wife saw it. She's like, hey, Wizard World Chicago is a big comic show. Why don't we go check it out? So that was my first experience at a convention, was Wizard World Chicago. And within 10 minutes of being inside, we were completely overwhelmed, had no idea what to do, and just kind of stumbled our way over towards Artist Alley. And what we ended up doing was we had our phones with us, and we were looking at these artist names, and we're like, who are these creators? And so the first one that we went to, we looked at his table, and he seemed like a nice guy. He was very friendly. He was just kind of sketching a little bit and not doing anything super crazy. And so I said, well, let's look him up. So we looked him up, and it turns out he was an artist for Green Lantern. I was like, hey, you like Green Lantern? She's like, I do like Green Lantern. I was like, we should go talk to him about Green Lantern. And she's like, well, what the heck are we going to say? And I'm like, that's a good question. So then we looked and we're like, okay, what books of Green Lantern did he do? And we found one. We're like, oh, okay. So we went over. There happened to be a vendor not that far away. And we just started flipping through a long box to try and find it. And sure enough, we found Green Lantern. We found an issue that he did. And we walked over and handed it to him. And he looked at us and he's like, first convention? And I said, yes. And he goes, awesome. Whose book is this? And I said, well, it's actually hers. And he's like, well, thank you for picking mine out. He said, I'm going to sign this, and I really hope you have an amazing convention, and I hope to see you around again. And, you know, fast forward to the end of the show, had a great time, get home, and we're like, okay, we should really figure out who this was and what it was. And it turned out that we had grabbed the first issue of Green Lantern Rebirth, and it was Ethan Van Sciver.
Oh, wow. That's
and I was like, holy crap, like of all the creators, you know, trying to figure out who he was. I was like, and he was just sitting there at a table, you know, kind of just doing his own thing. And
yeah.
That really made a huge impression on us, because within a half an hour, we got to a convention, were completely overwhelmed, found a gem in a long box, took it to a creator. He signed it. And like I said, I mean, I will always remember him saying, I hope you have a great show and I hope to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sticks with you. And within a half an hour, that being your first experience, the whole day could have been a train wreck after that, and it still would have been amazing.
Well, the thing that it's good is that your first one was good, because you could have had a bad one, and then it could have put a bad taste in your mouth. Because there are creators that are really introverted. Like, it's just hard to have a conversation with them.
It is.
And sometimes it's not necessarily the it's more rare than it is the norm. But you do run across one where it's like they don't even look up at you, or they don't acknowledge you at all, and
mm-hmm.
It's just a weird experience.
It is, and. You know, it's interesting. I've been asked by other people, you know, being a retailer, you get invited to certain things and you have different opportunities to meet creators. And one of the guys that comes in and puts in a couple hours a week helping us out, he goes, do you guys ever get nervous or scared when you're going to meet a creator, like a big name? And, you know, I think both James and I, we've gotten to the point where you get a little bit of an adrenaline rush when you meet a new creator that's, you know, a big name in the industry or whatever at the moment. But nowhere like we used to. And I think that that's kind of cool and comforting, that we still get the excitement, but we don't have the panic kind of thing set in. He and I would both agree there's one creator who's still alive that if we were to meet him, we would probably be awestruck for a few minutes and just not know what to do. And that would be Alan Moore. He's kind of one of the top writers for both of us. But it's such a fun medium, because you think about cartoons, animation, you think about just television in general, movies, how much access do you get to the people that are actually bringing it to life? You don't get a lot. I mean, maybe you do at San Diego if you're there and you get maybe 8 seconds to say hi to Will Smith as he, you know, signs something that you had to pay $50 for or more. But in our conventions, we have all of these people that are writing and doing the art and coloring that have done all of this work that we are, it is one-to-one. There's nothing between us. And
yeah.
we can talk to them. We can meet them. We can develop relationships with them. Like, there's creators that are bigger name creators than I ever thought that I would have a quote-unquote close relationship with. Like, if you would have told me 5 years ago that I could send an email to Garth Ennis and he'll respond in 2 hours, I would have been like, yeah, right. That time for me. You know, but that's the way it is. It's incredible the access that we have.
Yeah.
You know, like you guys, I know the Nerdy Legion guys, you guys are all really good friends with Colin Bunn.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that's incredible. Colin Bunn is an amazing writer. I mean, it felt like he was doing 40 books a month there for a while, a year back or so. He still has a huge output. But, I mean, think about that. You don't get to hang out with Benedict Cumberbatch every, you know, once a quarter when there's a big show.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So, I mean, if you put it into perspective and think about it, not only is our hobby and our passion really cool in what it is, it's really cool that we have the access to the people that actually create this gold.
Yeah, that's why I like Heroes so much, because it's yeah. the only convention that I've ever been to that doesn't have the Hollywood thing. Like,
yeah.
Baltimore is close, but Baltimore has amassed a few celebrities over the years. But that con, I mean, I spend a lot to get there. I fly there every year. I get a hotel. I stay for 5 days usually. But I love it. But over the course of time, it's changed for me. Like, the con experience was initially, like, the first 5 years, well, I can meet this creator, I can meet this creator.
Mm-hmm.
It's turned into something different. It's turned into, I can hang out with Jay and Dennis at C2E2. I can go talk to Martin. Oh, I can go hang out with Bill 24/7. I got to meet you. We met at C2E2, and we got to have dinner at Heroes. So
yep.
like, it has become like 100% for me, from my personal experience, to hang out with friends, because I don't have that here in Colorado. Like, all my friends are on the East Coast or Central Zone. I don't have that community, but I've built my best friends in the entire world are through comics.
Mm-hmm.
I would trust them with anything. And most of the people, I'd say like 98% of the people I've met online or through podcasting are genuine. In other words, they are who you met virtually. Like, there's no surprises. So that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, yeah, shows originally were just the starstruck moment where you're just roaming around looking at all of the good things to buy and all the people to meet, all the creators. And, you know, to a certain extent, it has also turned into that opportunity to meet up with, you know, folks like you and Dennis and Jay. And I've got a couple of mail order customers who live on the East Coast, and going to Heroes Con and having them, you know, that one of them lives at the time lived like an hour and a half out of Charlotte, you know, and one that was up in DC, and, you know, being able to see them. And that's one thing that's huge for me. If you're a customer of mine, and I'm traveling to an area where I know roughly you live, I'm probably going to reach out to you and say, hey, I'm going to be in your area. If you want to get together and, you know, put a name to a face or grab a drink or something like that, I'm always game for it. Because when I early on in my professional career outside of comics, I had a really great boss, a really great manager, and I called him my work dad, because he always had these just incredibly insightful nuggets that always helped me be a better person. And one of the things that he taught me over our time together was the personal relationship outweighs the business relationship. And that's 100% true, because a lot of these customers that I have, yeah, they're good and loyal customers. But when they email me and they tell me little bits about their life, you know, I get to find out, you know, what's going on and what's affecting them or things they're looking forward to. And you can't put a price on that because, like you said, if something goes wrong, I know who I can reach out to and, you know, vent to, or they feel comfortable coming to me and saying, I'm having this problem. I mean, like, I've had all sorts of different things, even in the limited time that I've had the mail order business under my view. But it's a real special and unique group of people.
Yeah.
And Heroes, I can't say enough amazing things about Heroes. For the longest time, you know, I thought, oh man, C2E2, just the amount of creators that are at C2E2 is just amazing. And it truly is. And going to San Diego, and that's where the big name creators are, like having time to talk with Grant Morrison and Adam Hughes, and that's the kind of show that you have to go to see those guys, and it's amazing. But 2 years ago, I went to Heroes for the first time after hearing, I think you were talking about it. I think the guys on CGS were talking about it. And there's two or three other places that kept saying it. And I was just like, you know what? I want to go to Heroes Con. And it's Father's Day weekend. And I felt bad because I had, you know, a toddler. And my wife was like, if this is what you want to do for Father's Day, I think you can let yourself have one thing a year. And so she actually bought me tickets for my birthday.
That's
And
awesome because that's what Bill's wife does. He goes away for Father's Day, but he does it every year.
Yeah, and you know, if it was on a different weekend, I would certainly go to it again anyways. But that first year, I just fell in love with it because it truly is creators like C2E2, more vendors than you're going to find at any other show, no media nuts, and it's, you know, a quarter of the population that's at C2E2. So the aisles are usually pretty clear. Saturday it gets a little bit busier, but my gosh, you can get around easy, and the books that are there, it's just incredible. So if anyone out there is looking for a show to go to, I mean, take it from another person, Heroes is where to be. We're getting emailed constantly saying Heroes is still a go. Cowabunga Comics, we've got a double booth this year at Heroes already paid for and booked. So, you know, we're in not just to go and enjoy it, but we're in to be a vendor too. That's how great of a show it is. We're going to drive a truck all the way from Wisconsin to Charlotte to be there.
Yeah, I hope that happens. We're
Me
still
too.
planning on going, but got fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's
It'll
pretty
be the
far out,
first. It'll be the
so.
first one that we've missed since when, Barb? How long? We've been going to Heroes every year. See, that was the first con I went for Geek Brunch. Like, it was an amazing time, and I haven't missed one ever since because I meet up with friends every year, and that was probably like I didn't know like anything about cons until I'd been to Heroes because that's when it changed for me. Like I went to San Diego. We went there a couple years in a row, and it was just a different experience. And to be honest with you, it would stress me out because of the lines and just the whole planning thing, because I don't like to plan. Like I don't plan the podcast either. I have no agenda. I just talk. I didn't have a list of questions for you. I just off the cuff. It's just the way I am because I want it to be more like a natural conversation than an interview, because that's what I enjoy.
Well, and it's your diary, so it's what you
Yeah,
want. And
it's what I want. And
exactly.
I don't do it for, I guess, the downloads. I do it for me. It helps me keep my sanity and just talking to people about comics. It's just an amazing hobby.
I agree.
I'm glad that I don't know how. I think I met you through Comic Book Page, or it might have been through Comics for Fun and Profit.
Yeah,
Like
that could have been it too.
I
It was one
can't
of the two.
remember which one it was. It
Yeah.
might have been Comics for Fun and Profit. But yeah, Drew I've never met, but I talk to Drew a lot.
Drew's a he's a fun guy, and Kyle, they're both really good guys. If
Yeah.
you get a chance to cross paths with them, highly recommend it.
It's supposed to
They're
happen
exactly the
at
way they are.
C2E2, yeah, a couple years ago, but he didn't show. But and I don't know when I'll make it back to Chicago again personally because of the it's the time of year.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
just
Even we didn't go down this year. I mean, this is the first year in Oh man, over a decade that James hasn't gone, and since we got the shop, we've been there every year. We didn't go this year. It just the timing was terrible, and
How much
just wasn't
time do
good.
you spend in the shop? Because you've got two
Me,
jobs.
yeah. Me personally, I think in the physical store, maybe 6, 7 hours a week.
Is
But
that usually on the
doing.
weekend or is it on the weekdays?
Typically Tuesday afternoons and nights. So we get our
That's when you
shipments
get your
on
shipment,
Tuesday,
yeah.
right? And so I try and get everything out. We have weekly subscribers, just like DCBS. We have weekly, twice monthly, and monthly. And I always want to have the weekly guys packed and ready to go end of day Tuesday, so they hit the ground on Wednesday, so that folks usually get their books by Friday. Sometimes Saturday, but that's the goal. So I try and get in the afternoon. I have a work from home flexibility before COVID-19 that allows me to work from home, and then I can get my crap done quick, get into the store for a couple hours, get things laid out, call in damages and shortages, and pull the weekly guys. And then I'll usually pick my daughter up from school around 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then I will buzz back home with her, and we'll hang out and do, daddy daughter stuff and household stuff, and then cook dinner. And my wife usually gets home, and then we have dinner as a family. We do some more stuff with our daughter. She goes down to bed around 7, and I typically try and get a half hour to an hour with my wife just to kind of figure out what the heck is going on for the next day or two. And then I buzz back to the store, and I'm usually there till close to midnight on Tuesdays and get everything squared away and ready to go. And then Fridays I take a long lunch. Usually I try to take a long lunch. Some days I can't. It turns into being an evening thing, but I prep the FOC list and get that sent out. And then Monday night, I'm here at home compiling all the FOC orders and making sure that my database has all the orders put into it, and getting the weekly FOC entered in with James at about 9:30 on Monday nights.
Are you and James sort of like 50-50, like as far as the ownership of the comic shop? Yeah.
Yep, we just split it down the middle halfway.
Cool. And it's cool that you found somebody that I guess could, is a friend and is trusted as well,
Yeah, and it was one of those things too, where we had to make a quick decision. You're going in. Are you all in, or are you going to be kind of all in? And we both were just, we're all in. We're in. And we haven't really had any rough patches, as far as finances or anything like that. And I think a lot of that's because it's not a primary source of income for either of us. So we haven't felt the need to pull a lot of money out of the store. We just continue to reinvest it in inventory and,
Plus, you
assets.
diversified your store quite a bit.
Yeah.
So that'll make it a draw. And you
Yeah.
have a big store, so
We
I'm
do.
sure
It's
people go visit from all over just to. You're like a miniature mile high.
We are a micro mile high. Yeah,
That
no,
store is
we're behind.
incredible. I've been there, and it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I had training that I had to go to out in the Denver area, and about 3 years ago, and I made a stop over there. And one of the great and terrible things about owning a comic store is you have a critical eye to any other store that you go to.
Yeah.
And I do. Whenever I travel, I try and go to as many stores as I can. And it's not to be critical. It's actually, we, and those that listen to the Cowcast know that when James and I go and do our little tours and looking at stores, what we're out there looking for are things that we haven't thought of, ways of displaying product, ways of designing the store to change flow. And we found and implemented different things that we've seen at different stores, but it also comes with a risk of being critical of certain practices and certain things. And one of the things that James and I pride ourselves quite substantially on is our pricing. We're not out there to be the cheapest, but we are out there to be representative of the global market. So when you come to our store, if you want to buy a wall book, you're going to pay in most cases, if it's a modern Silver Age to modern, pretty much, you're going to pay the eBay going price, or if it's a graded book, the GPA 90-day average. That's what we use to price it on. We're in a global market, and we need to price things as if it could be sold at any given point in time to anyone.
You have to,
Well,
because what's the st
many
what's the
stores I've
st
gone to would be counter to
but but
that.
what's to stop me, from, I've gone to stores. Okay, I look at the wall book. What do I usually do? Can I get this cheaper from where I go? Is I go to mycomicshop.com because I found that for back issues is better than Mile High because Mile High uses their own grading system. Mycomicshop.com grades under. So like if I get a VG book, it almost looks like a fine book. So they grade conservatively, whereas Mile High grades aggressively. And that's why I choose that. Plus I find their market fair. So I'll look there, and then I'll look at eBay, and then I'll look at the price that they're, and then I'll, so sometimes it's, wow, they don't even have it in stock, or this is what it would cost me, and then I have to pay shipping on top of it. So I add all that in, and then I say, could I get that? And that's how I usually determine. I do the same thing at conventions.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, if you want to be able to sell books, you need to play with a global market pricing system, and that's what we do. And we'll have people come in, and they'll see, a $100 wall book, and they'll say, "Well, you take 70 for it." And usually, our response, especially if it's someone we've never seen, is, "Well, that's market rate for it, so that's what it's priced at. We don't price over. But if you find another couple of wall books you want to put together, yeah, we can do a little discount for you." And that's true. That's how we do it. So if you're somebody coming in, and you want to buy a $30 book. That's going for $30 to $35 on eBay. Expect to pay $30 because that's the going rate. But if you're but got that $30 book and you've got $200 more of books, wall books or back issues, you can expect that we'll take a little bit off. And the larger your stack grows, the more comes off. It's just kind of how it works because we're spreading our margin out over multiple items, and you're buying multiple items, so you're making our margin more attainable.
Yeah, that's cool. I wish I could be at that store. My store
Well,
here
we'd love
is
to have you.
getting ready to close, and I kind of left it and went 100% DCBS because he kind of put me aside and said, "This is what's going on. I think I'm shutting down. I don't know if I'll be getting new books." So here, even though he's still getting new books, he told me go away, and I did.
Well, I
So
think that
like
there's at least something admirable about that.
that was very admirable because he didn't do that with everybody. He knew I'd been there forever, and I was there like clockwork, and he said, "This is what's going on." And he said, at the time, he was like, "I'm tired of living in poverty." He's like, he's sort of barely making it. And now with this virus thing, I don't know what it's going to do to his margin. I think he's there's been three shop closers in the Springs, and I know I've been seeing a lot of them lately. I know there was one in Arizona, but they retired because I'd been to that one in Phoenix, and that was a great shop. I think it's called All Around Comics or something like that. But because I visit comic shops wherever I go as well. I like to see the way they display it. I would like to work it, but I always have the fear. I have such a knowledge of comics because I know all of previews. I know what everything's about. I read a lot. But my biggest fear is that it would become a business and I could sep and I couldn't s separate. Like I don't know if it would become more stressful because I'm not consuming it. And that's the part that I would have trouble with. Like if I was retired, I wouldn't care. But
And And I think, like I said, that's what makes it unique with James and I, is that it's not our bread and butter. Like, it's not what puts bread on our table. So that takes a huge piece of stress off of it. Naturally, we still stress about it. It is a business. You still want it to be successful, and you put in a lot of time and
Profitable,
energy to it. But at the end of the day, it's not the fallback. So if the shop breaks even for a month, okay. It didn't affect us in any way, per se, other than we couldn't add any inventory, or maybe it broke even because we did add some big inventory.
Are you open now, full time? I mean, with the virus going on?
Yep, we are, and we want to remain open as long as possible, because especially where we are in Oconomowoc in Lake Country, there's very few things that are as socially distancing compatible. We have books and video games and board games and things like that. So the products that we carry are really fine-tuned to things like this, where you have to spend large amounts of time, isolating yourself from other
Isolated,
people
right?
potentially. So yeah, we're going to stay open as long as we can. We actually, James and I, have had discussions every day this week about it. And where we landed today is we're just going to stay open until the state tells us we can no longer be open. If we don't make a sale, it doesn't matter. We've got one guy who is full time and one guy who is hourly and puts in a few hours a week. We're not stopping their work. We're not stopping payroll. We can cover their payroll for quite a while. We're shifting, and we're starting to list more things on eBay. As we have less people in the store, we have more time to list. If they shut us down, we'll just continue to double down on eBay. We also have a number of internal improvements that we want to do inside the store. So this is a great time. If
You can
the
start
customer
moving
numbers are
stuff
lower, we can
around,
do
yeah.
things. Yeah.
That's
So
right.
we're taking, trying to take the glasses half full, we're making lemonade approach, as opposed to the sky is falling, cry me a river, type of thing. But again, it's not our main source of income. If it doesn't do amazingly well, okay. For Sam, it is his main source of income. So we are going to stick through, and we will continue to pay him and continue to give him meaningful work to do.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I think our shops are open here. Everything else is closed. It looks like everything is closed.
The one thing we can't do is we can't have gaming events, which is kind of a bummer, because really our store, and I think a lot of stores that have gaming, are one of the few areas where, I'm not going to say all, but a decent portion of the folks that come into game, that's their only community. A lot of them are, I guess, what in as a, when I was a kid, you would have been deemed kind of a social outcast or whatever, things like that. You were interested in things that nobody else was. So it's really, that has weighed on us a little bit. We've thought about that, because we're pretty keen to make it an environment that is welcoming to all of those people, and so that's going to be hard. But that is the one part of the Wisconsin legislation that we do have to adhere to. So we'll do
Right,
that.
gatherings of
Ten.
parties, yeah.
Yeah.
So
And we.
that's, I can't believe how bad timing could hurt something so bad. Like, let's just say Bloodshot was released at theaters during this whole event. So
Yeah.
people were like, I think that one's gonna become under scrutiny for budget because they couldn't go to the theater to see it. You had one
That's what happened
weekend.
to Birds of Prey in Asia. The global market came back very, very weak on it, because half of them couldn't go see it.
So, and then there's a comic store I go here just for the official drawer box because he's the only guy that carries it. And I can't use the BCW ones because I stack them five high and I found that they bend if I don't keep the top board on it. And by having that top cover on it, it defeats the whole purpose of pulling it out. So I just love the drawer boxes. Plus, I love the fact that they have anchors, so you can anchor the boxes together, and they don't budge when you pull on them. And I love their rail system. their rail system has become awesome because nothing will move. But that's the only store I can go to, and there was a gaming shop opening up right next to it, and I was like, what bad timing. Like, they couldn't have picked like a worse year to do that.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, we've talked to all of
you,
our gaming vendors and orders are way down because these gaming stores can't run.
yeah. I hear video games are up though.
Yes. Yeah.
But video game
Imagine
market's different. You
that.
could download a lot of the games now, so
Right. Right.
yeah. But I wanted to thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I could talk to you for hours on just about anything.
Well, I've got as much time as you want. I am yours.
What is your customer base like? Just curious, because I'm always fascinated, because going to one shop here and then going to a shop there, especially like one where I notice there's like a huge variable, like as if you have a shop near a college. Like the shop near a college looks totally different from any other shop anywhere, because they are like totally into independence.
Right.
Like they'll stock up on Scout and Vault and all kinds of those back orders, whereas a regular comic shop, you'll get Image, DC, Marvel, just sort of the main publishers. You may get a couple of Aftershock or Boom. What is your store clientele like? Not including
Yeah.
your mail order though. Mail order is sort of different because
It's its
people could
own
order.
unicorn. Yeah. Yeah. So our store in general, I guess I'll give you a little bit of lay of the land first, and then we'll kind of get into the clientele. So we're located in an area that's called Lake Country, Wisconsin. And what it predominantly is a lot of rural area with lakes and then these small kind of cities and villages within maybe a 10, 15-mile radius of one another. So we tend to be a little bit more affluent. It's a predominantly a white flight area from, when we had the transition from the inner cities to the suburbs. This Lake Country is kind of the farthest away the inner city, inner Milwaukee employees went to. So, like I myself, my main job is in downtown Milwaukee. I live out in Heartland, which is almost to Oconomowoc, so I'm about 40-minute drive out of Milwaukee. And with a lot more affluent people, we do have some people that are on the fringes and, struggle to get by. But because we are more affluent, and again, of course, we are Wisconsin, we are predominantly Caucasian. We do have some minority folks, but that's pretty much what we are. White flight, essentially, is how you would label us. And then as far as the actual people, the clientele that we have, when we first got the store, it was pretty much just the new comic store and Magic and Pokemon. And that was pretty much it, because that's really all the owner at the time put into anything. What we have transitioned it to over the last 5.5, 6 years is to truly be that destination shop. And to be the destination shop, you have to have a lot more than Magic, Pokemon, and new comics. So we have a real diverse group of people that come in. We have some people that come in every Wednesday or every Saturday to get their weekly comics. We have some people that will come in once a month to get trades. And then we've got always have new people coming in to dig in our bins and buy wall books. And we've really focused our energies on opening everybody's eyes to everything. So we have people that were originally just new comic purchasers who have now started dabbling in buying back issues because they understand the significance of, a first appearance or something like that. Or will say like, oh, well, if you're liking this comic, you might want to actually go back and read these. And they'll be like, what? There's more like this? And not like, what? There's more Green Lantern, but like maybe a specific story. Like, for example, we had some people who were really into Justice League Dark. And we're like, oh, cool. We're Alan Moore fans. You should go check out this stuff. it was kind of the whole start of it. And then that, of course, hooked them on other things and other things. And so we've tried to diversify our offerings, and because of that, we've got a really diverse crowd of people that come in. We have some that are just strictly Pokemon, strictly Magic, strictly D&D. But we do have a broad group of all of them. And then we get kind of that the two our two I don't want to say favorite because we don't play favorites. They don't necessarily spend the most money, but two of our most interesting ones are we have a lot of moms that'll come in and they'll want to get a board game for their family. And they know that we carry board games, but we don't carry the Walmart and Target board games because Walmart and Target carry them cheaper than we can. So instead of having Monopoly, Sorry, and Yahtzee, we've got Pandemic, Xeno Shift, games like that. And so they'll come in and they'll be like, well, we'd like
How
to buy a board game.
appropriate, pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I come
Believe it or not,
play?
we've sold out. We really have. But, they'll come in and they'll want to get a game, and they realize, like, wow, you guys are a lot more than just comic book guys. You actually have some pretty cool games. And so now we have, like, these suburban soccer moms that'll come in like every couple of months and be like, well, we've played that one like 14 times, so now they want a new challenge. They want a new game. So that's kind of cool. And
That is
I
cool.
think for me, one of my favorite types of customers are the ones that they don't usually spend a ton of money, but we'll get moms that'll come in and dads too, and they'll say, our son or daughter's struggling to read, and the person at the school or doctor or whatever had suggested maybe trying comic books or something else. Do you have anything that could help my child read? And those discussions are always really interesting because they come in thinking it's almost like a prescription, like, oh, I have an infection, I need to get antibiotics. And so you walk in and you say, my son or daughter is having a hard time reading, can you give us the prescription for fixing that? And those are the moments that I love, and when I get to work in the store and sharing these moments, it really makes me proud to be what we are, because it's not so much about a prescription. It's ideally the child is there and you're talking to them, you get down on their level and you just say, what do you like? What looks really cool? And you start there. And then you go from that to finding the right book for them to try. And watching, for me as a parent, anyone who is a parent knows it is a high anxiety job. And to watch parents' faces as you're interacting with their child and they aren't trying to draw something out of them, because as a parent, it can be so frustrating trying to get something out of your child because you just don't know how to get it out sometimes.
Yeah.
And to see how they go from kind of this, like, I can't believe I'm in this place, I would never be caught dead here, to all of a sudden just realizing that there's a potential that their son or daughter could be finding something that really excites and interests them. And I love spending the time with the kids to figure out what they like. And it's always something different. It's never what you expect. Like, I think the misconception is that every boy comes in wanting to know about Batman. And that's not true. Not all of them
Yeah.
want to know about Batman. Some of them want to know about Swamp Thing, and
That's
it's like,
cool.
you have to,
That's
yeah,
my
you
kid
have to,
right there. Swamp Thing.
you have to go with where they go, because where they show an interest, that's going to engage them. And so the first thing that we always try and do is find out what's going to engage them and then help them understand, okay, if you like this character, these are the places that we would recommend trying to start. And you can do it any number of ways. Well, ask the parents, is this something where you just want to try like a single issue, or do you want to get a a collection, like a book? Because they don't know all the lingo, so you're trying to bridge that gap too. And you work with the whole thing, and the real payoff is, a week or 2 weeks later when that parent comes back and says, do you remember when you got so and so this? Well, she loved it or he loved it. Do you have more?
Yeah, that's awesome. You
And
were telling
so.
that one story, and I can't remember if it was on your podcast or if it was on John's, but you were talking about Shazam when that movie came out, that
Oh yeah.
you had kids wanting that product. You were
Yeah.
giving them that, and it's like, I have nothing to give you. But
Yep.
it's incredible that it did work. And I mean, that's DC's fault for not putting it out on time, but it was working, you know? They saw the movie. They wanted more. You gave it to them, and then they wanted to come back for more. And the
Yeah,
problem
and the fun
is
thing
they'll
with
lose
that,
interest.
yeah, the fun thing with that was that there wasn't any material really in print other than the Jeff Smith book, which neither James or I are the biggest fans of. And when we actually took the older Shazam comics that we had that were, $1.99, $2.99, and put them in front of the kids, they're like, "Well, that's not Shazam." And we're like, "Well, open it up and read a couple pages." And then the next thing you know, they're coming to the counter with four of them. Like, this is cool. And it was like, yeah, so it worked.
My favorite is the Power of Shazam, but
Yeah.
because it paid respect to the Fawcett stuff while still making it sort of contemporary, and I dug it, because there was the 70s one that was more like the Fawcett, like which was wholesome and crazy, and the movie is kind of a little bit of both, so it's
Yeah.
like you got to hit the sweet spot with that character. And it's I love that character, just the historical significance of it, that it was outselling Superman just blows my mind.
Right.
And I never realized up until recently how long that lawsuit lasted. And it really was not that Shazam was like Superman. It was really like they were lifting panels from Action Comics. They were, oh, Superman's pulling the elevator. Oh, look, Shazam is doing this a couple months later, doing the exact same thing. Oh, Superman's doing this. And that's how they ended up sort of winning that lawsuit, because it wasn't that, oh, this guy has superpowers, this guy has superpowers. It was like panel here, panel there. And that's what it came down to. I never realized it. I thought it was just, hey, this, and now you have like Supreme and Hyperion, and anything
Yep.
that Liefeld does is a
Yep.
knockoff of the Avengers or Justice League,
Yeah.
or his own creation, Cable. So
Yeah.
it's crazy how everything evolves, and I love it all. Like I just want to absorb it all. The only downside is I'm getting older, and I'm not going to be able to. I want to read everything, and I know I can't, but it's weird as I get older. I mean, a lot of my friends get grumpier with age. In other words, that ain't mine, or this isn't like the way it was, or the grass is not green over here, and it's like,
Get off my lawn.
and I've changed. I'm going the opposite way when it comes to comics, and it's so weird. I never thought in my life I'd be reading manga, and I've been reading manga, and I don't know what's happening to me, but it's like everything. I think being a mood reader really helps me, because I don't feel obligated on any of my podcasts to stay current. I just read it when I want to read it, and I
And
think it
I am
helps
the
me.
same way, and I think that's so important because there's nothing worse than forcing something.
Yeah. But that story about the kids is pretty incredible, and the thing that's amazing about that is it pertains to older people too, because one question I get from relatives and from friends all the time is, "Oh, Mike's the comic book guy. Tell me what to read." And my response to them is, "I can't tell you what you're gonna like. You tell me. What TV shows do you like? What kind of things
Right.
do you like? What do you like to eat? What do you like to do?" Then I can suggest something, because I know everything about comics. So if you tell me what you like, what genres you like, I can point you in the right direction. But for me to blindly give something to somebody, I just refuse to do it, because there's no way I can guess that somebody will
Right.
like something. It's just not possible. I need to know somebody to be able to say, "Hey, you're gonna like it." Like, I know Bill to me is like a brother. Like he's my best friend in the entire world because I don't know. I like know what he's gonna say. I
Yeah.
like know him so well, and I can talk to him and echo things off of him, and we have such similar backgrounds. We're almost like the same age. We have sort of the same upbringing, the same philosophies. We
Same profession or similar
this we're,
profession.
we're both electrical engineer graduates. It's just incredible. It's like the mirror me. It's like if I met, I don't know, it's so weird. And who would have thought that a podcast, like I was doing Geek Brunch with my original host, and that's how I got to meet Bill. I would have never met him because we used to have this thing called Brunch Buddies where it would just be me and Heath, and then we'd have somebody else call in. And that's how I met Bill. And then when Heath left, Bill was like, "Can I join?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." So it just odd how all that comes about. But I like your story about the kid, 'cause that's something that's sort of rewarding for both people, the child and the parent.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but you're forming like this relationship with both of them that could last for years if they're there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
If they go to like a college that's nearby and they know you're there, they might go there for something else that they've changed into, but they know that you provide it.
Yeah, and parents too. Parents talk, man. I mean,
Yeah.
that's how you find out what's going on. And if one parent, has a struggle, it's interesting. I think that there's a stigma put on a lot of things. Mental disorders, depression, anxiety. The same stigmas are put on for parents with their kids that may be struggling with things, whether it's academically or athletically or whatever. And I think it's a real positive thing that we can do in the comics medium that, we have a unique way of being able to potentially ignite a spark in somebody and help them, learn. It's interesting because there's a number of people who will immigrate to America and they'll say they learned English by watching like Seinfeld or, reading Superman.
That's
Those
a
are
good way.
common stories that you hear.
The
And
Seinfeld one
if it
I've
works
never
for,
heard.
oh really? Oh, we've
No,
yeah,
but
I've
that's
heard that.
fascinating because I love that show. You give me
Oh.
Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like I Curb Your Enthusiasm this year has had me rolling. Like I have never I can't believe it. But those shows I'll watch. I can watch over and over and over again because they are truly a show about nothing.
Yep. It's a show about nothing.
Yeah.
But no, like if it can do that for someone who doesn't even know the language, it's a tool that we can use to help our own. And so it's cool. It's a really cool thing. And because of the way the story is told, both through pictures and words, that helps kids be able to try and chunk out the word and start to sound it out because they can usually look at what's happening in the imagery. It's just really cool. It's a right brain, left brain, all of it kind of mixed into one thing.
Yeah. You know how you're talking about Marvel zombies, like they're just loyal to the product? I'd consider myself a DC zombie.
Yeah,
I am
an
loyal to
actual
the
term for that.
product, and like somebody asked me the question, pick me a decade of DC, and I was like, I can't do it because I find something to love in every decade in
Yeah.
DC. So I am excuse me. I am engrossed in that, the history of the characters and the evolution of the characters, and I like things when they change and evolve, and so I'm a DC. There used to be a term for it. It wasn't a DC zombie, it was a DC something, but I can't remember what it was because supposedly you can't be both. Oh my God.
Right, yeah.
But
No, you are
I
loyal to one,
yeah.
not both.
But I am both. But Just curiosity, like, are Batman sales going up now because of Punchline, or like, we just switched from Tom King to James Tynion, a Tynan. I always pronounce it Tynion, but did that change Batman sales for you, or are they pretty much consistent?
When the writers swap happened, 85 to 86, our numbers pretty much stayed the same. We weren't really hit hard with any sort of loss. We weren't hit with any sort of uptick. I think there was a lot of hesitancy. I think there was a number of people who were getting Batman with Tom King as the writer that were enjoying it. There was a percentage of people who were getting it and not liking it, but were the completist, and they had to have the entire run. And then you had some people, myself included, who just, it wasn't engaging me anymore, so I just dropped it. And it was the question of, would we get those people back? Yes, with Punchline, and I think the next upcoming character is Clown Killer, with the Joker War. Yes, we're seeing a significant uptick.
There's people
And
excited about Joker War. Like, it's got some buzz
yeah.
behind it.
And I remember when Tynan was announced to be the new writer. I can't remember where I was, but I was talking to him face to face shortly after that. Interesting side story here. He went to school. He grew up in Milwaukee, like just down 40 minutes from where I am. And he actually went to school where my father-in-law teaches and had my father-in-law for physics. So,
What
weird,
a co
funny
what a
roundabout
what
story
a what a
there.
coincidence, yeah.
Right. So, and actually, if anybody has read the Boom series, The Woods,
The Woods,
that he
that's
wrote.
incredible. I like it.
Okay, so in the first thing, it's the first issue. There's like a passing joke made by the principal when they land in the alien world, saying like, the boys from Marquette High aren't going to be here to save you. That was the school he went to in Milwaukee. That is the school my father-in-law teaches at. So that's kind of fun.
That is kind of cool.
Anywho, I was talking to him, and he had said, what would you like to see out of the Batman title? And I said, honestly, what I would like to see is, either new character creations or bring characters who haven't been involved in the story back and just make it exciting every issue. I understand if you're going to have to write for a trade because that's an editorial edict. I know that you learn from Scott, and Scott likes to write a little bit longer, archetype work, I said, and that's cool, but just make each issue exciting so that it whets people's whistle to come back. Don't leave them bored or hanging. And he's like, well, I don't ever want to leave anybody bored and hanging. I'm like, well, you know what I mean. And he's like, I know what you mean. And then he went on to Twitter, and he did his, after it came out, he put out some tweets asking everybody else, what characters would you like to see? How would you like the stories to work? And he got a lot of the same type of response. Either create new characters or like bring in, like Scarecrow, Calendar Man, some of these really great characters who we don't see very often, and start to tell exciting stories with them. Like, yeah, we get it. Batman and Joker, it's kind of a thing. They have a relationship. But there's other people in Gotham, we can include them. So he's, I think, doing a really good job of getting people excited for what Batman is. I think Tom King came in with a lot of writer name hype, and I think the Batman and Catwoman relationship is definitely something that strikes a chord with people. However, I think 85 issues is can be a little bit long for people to get payoff. And so what I hope Tynan does is takes this momentum and finds a way to find good closure at a good pace and start something new and fresh and exciting and just keep doing that. Because that's really what, when you look back at some of the longer historical runs that were, really good, that's kind of what they thrived on, was that constant excitement and closure, excitement and closure.
Yeah,
So
but a lot of the
that's
successful stuff too, in the Batman realm, which we're heading into this Joker War, was that. In other words, you would go from Cataclysm to Fugitive, and you know what I mean? Nightfall to this, and there, I think that those storylines that are bigger than life, but have payoff every issue, like. the ones that are successful, like when you're reading those events, there's payoff in every book. Whether you jump from Catwoman to another title, there's something significant in each one of those titles. So it felt like you had to follow it. Just like when Superman had the shield numbering, it was you were following it from Superman to action to adventure,
Right.
because you didn't want to miss part of that story. And but you could always point to a single issue and say, well, these three things happened. That's significant. I think that's important for a monthly comic, is just to make sure you at least have something significant happen, and it's not
Right.
just you're not just moving to the right.
Exactly.
Just put something in there, even if it's a relationship or something in there that can stick. It helped you remember it.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of payoff in the issue. And that's, unfortunately, that can sometimes get lost as people try and weave these gigantic arcs. And I don't know if it's the writers are becoming more influential than editors. And so they're kind of, the editors are saying, well, we need to do this. And the writers saying, well, no, it is what it is. And if that's the case, then I think we need to revisit what the role of the editor is. There's certain times where you kind of look at something and go, did this even get looked at? Because it doesn't feel like it did. And I think that as you continue to go through this evolution with Joker War, my hope is that we will have kind of that continuity across the tie-ins. And I think DC is doing what feels like a quite a reasonable job of reining in what could be a very big and sprawling thing. And keeping it fairly tight, they're supposed to come out with an infographic pretty soon that has the tie-ins and what the Joker War story is, and I want to say it's like 10 issues, something like that. I mean, it's not overly ridiculous. You look at the other hand, you look at Marvel and you see Empire and you see some of these other things that are just like 47 books, and you're kind of like, holy crap.
It is,
Jeez,
but
that's a
the thing that I like that Marvel's doing with Empire, is a lot of the creative teams that are doing it are the monthly creative team. So like Hickman's doing, the X-Men, or Brisson's doing this, or it's like the creative teams are still solid. As far as like, if you're into that book, you'll probably dig the tie-in, you know?
Yeah, and I'm always a little hesitant, but also a little excited about that in the same ways of, well, okay, this is a big, line-wide event or something like that. Are these people fully aware of how their book's going to slot in and what happens if it's late and all of that? And then you've also got the other side of, well, it's the same writer, so I know the tone's not going to necessarily change. I know that, what's going on in the story hopefully won't be jolted to the point where it's no longer, they didn't close off what they did before. We've got this new thing starting and we just have this hanging story thread. So yeah, it's always interesting how they do that. But I think Joker War, I'm looking forward to it. I know a lot of our customers are looking forward to it. Probably the most excitement we've had on a Batman title since Batman 50. And let's just hope that it doesn't end up the same way as Batman 50, because that was not good.
Yeah. That's why I kind of left the podcast, because I didn't want to read my Batman books on time. And I think it made me not like Tom King's run, because I was doing Gotham by Geeks and I was looking at it from an issue perspective, and I wasn't sort of digging it. And what I did once I, on my own terms, when I let it collect and I just sat down and read 15 issues back to back, it really worked for me. So I don't know, like I know what I like and I know how I want to read now.
Yeah.
And I know what works for me. But I also respect the people that keep caught up in their books because they're coming back every month for a reason. For me, I'm more of like, I'm kind of like in my retirement. I'm not retired, but that mentality where I just want to just sit and read a bunch of them back to back.
And I think that that for me is a concern, because you're releasing it in periodical format on a schedule, similar to Sports Illustrated. You're going to read when Sports Illustrated for March comes out, you're going to read for Sports Illustrated for March.
Well, I'm an
And
anomaly.
you are, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I tend to be as well, but when the bulk of your customer base is reading it serialized monthly or every 2 weeks, whatever cadence it's coming out. And if they put the issue down and they go, "What the hell happened? There was no movement." That's not a good thing. And, most people don't accumulate the volume that you do, and so they don't have the luxury of kind of picking and choosing. It's their budget is, $40 a week or
Yeah, and
$30 a
it's
week,
easy to jump.
and that's it.
It's
Right.
easy to, if
And
you're not satisfying me, then I'd rather move to this.
exact,
I'll
or
go
worse,
where else.
yeah,
Or
even
worst
worse, so they
case.
just say, I'll just spend the money on Hulu.
Exactly.
And
That's
that's
the
where I
worst. That's
think
the bad. That's the worst case right there. 'Cause then you've just
exactly.
lost somebody that's reading to another medium.
And that's where I think we need to pull the reins in a little bit on these creators. And if you want to tell this big epic, okay, that's a great opportunity to release a series of OGNs. This great writer did this one story about that. It was a series of OGNs that he did, and the company that he did them for turned it into like this massive, huge movie enterprise. Oh yeah, Jim Starlin and Thanos. It worked. It worked really well the way that he took his stories that he wanted to tell, and he told them in an OGN format. It didn't dissuade buyers. People were actively engaged, and you generally got a good story in that hardcover or trade. But that's something that I think we're, as a medium, we're on a pretty thin razor's edge with, where we're starting to say, well, we're going to write for the trade because that's where we know the long-term money is. That's where we know the Scholastic money, the Barnes and Noble, the Amazon money is. So we're going to write for that. But we're going to have all of these people who have just become kind of, I'm putting a generic bad term on it, but have just become sheep and just follow the flock and just do what they're supposed to. They're going to subsidize us getting to that trade. And I've had customers tell me that's what they feel like. I am just subsidizing this creation to a trade. You should never have a customer feel like that.
Yeah.
No matter what format a customer purchases in, they should feel like that format and that content was created for their enjoyment in that way. Similar to if you watch an episode of Seinfeld or I watch an entire season. I can still enjoy my season. You can still enjoy your episode,
Yeah.
right? And that's one of the struggles I think that I have right now with just where the industry is. I'm not as concerned about variant covers. I'm not as concerned about having Diamond as a single kind of monopoly, basically, without being considered a monopoly. Are those things detractors in the industry? Sure. Do they have their problems? Absolutely. But ultimately, we don't sell books because of how good or bad Diamond is. We sell books because of the content that's in them. And when we're talking to customers and we're suggesting things to read, we're oftentimes suggesting things that have already come out and have been collected. And this is a realization that James and I've had over the last year or so. When somebody comes in and says they want to read Batman, during the Tom King run, very seldom did we say, well, you should get on the monthly Batman book. Usually the first thing we would do is we would say, okay, well, here's Long Halloween. Here's Hush. We would take them to kind of the staples. Learn if you like the character. If you like the character, we'll get you into the next thing. Now, with Tynan, that's different. We've been starting to say, well, it's getting pretty exciting. We've got second and third prints coming out of these books that, the first print sold out of, so you can still get the book and start right in at the ground floor and go. But yeah, so that's kind of philosophically where I'm at, is we're struggling right now as a medium to define how we can keep everyone engaged no matter what format they buy in.
Yeah,
So.
that's a tough balance. What are your top five DC sellers?
Top five DC sellers. Number one, far and away, is Watchmen. That is considered, and I'm going to lump DC and Vertigo together. So I would say
Okay.
Watchmen is number one. Let's see, what would number two be? I don't even know. So number one, clear and away, Watchmen. Also in the top five for us, Why the Last Man. We are huge lovers of it. Infinite Crisis. We love Infinite Crisis. All three of us that work in the store love Infinite Crisis. So we tend to do pretty good at selling that. Trying to think what other stuff. For me, I'm a huge Nightwing fan, so I always push the Judas contract on people if they're interested in Nightwing, because a lot of them are like, that doesn't look like Nightwing. Oh, just wait, it gets exciting. And then honestly, probably outside of Watchmen, like the biggest superhero book that we see people jumping onto is, or that we give people to jump onto, is Long Halloween. It's one of those books where you don't have to have a lot of Batman baggage to enjoy it. It kind of exists in its own world, so to speak, and there's the Dark Victory and Haunted Night that go with it as well. So if
Yeah,
people like it,
there's
there's more to
the
jump on.
Catwoman one, When in Rome or whatever it
When in
is.
Rome.
Yeah. Yeah,
And then a
those are
couple of the
good
other things.
ones.
A couple other things that we'll throw out there. I gotta go over and look at it real quick, make sure I get the right title. So Batgirl Year One and Robin Year One by Chuck Dixon.
Yeah.
People always love those. And the other one, Green Lantern Rebirth. That's a good one. So those are probably the ones I would say
Your
more than
top
anything
trade
for us.
sellers. How about
Yeah.
monthly?
Monthly, monthly books.
Yeah.
So Batman obviously is probably number one for
Okay.
DC. Trying to think what would number two be off the top of my head. Action has been pretty strong for us since Bendis came over. Trying to think what. So many titles that come out, it's
Justice League? Would
maybe a
that
little.
be one of them?
No, that one's pretty low, actually. That one probably does about 15% of what Batman does. It's one of the weaker ones that we have,
How about the
actually.
Hill House books?
Those do really well. The Basket Full of Heads and Lolo Woods, those ones do very good. Any of the Batman White Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, any of that stuff,
How
that
about
does
the
really
larger format stuff? Does that work at your store? Like the
Yeah.
Harlequin and the Joker and the.
The Batman Dam did fantastic, all three issues. Harleen did incredibly well. The Joker, was it Joker Killer Smile, and then the Harley Loves
Joker.
Joker or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those aren't doing quite as well, but Batman Damned obviously had its first issue thing, but I think just the creative team on that one sold it because of
I
Ezra
actually love
Miller
that
made.
story too. Like
Oh, it was really good.
the thing that amazed me there is the first issue, I was like, why the hell is Constantine telling this? Like why like I couldn't grab it. Like why it was happening, and then the way they flipped it at the end, like the way it started and it flipped, it just blew my mind. Plus the art was just amazing in that book.
It was. And the
Incredible.
speaking of art, I mean, the Harleen art that Stefan Sage does is just amazing. So,
Yeah.
and the story was fantastic in it too. So those two did really, really well. If I was to say the one book that I wish more people would read, I would probably throw out there Batman Beyond. I think right now, monthly ongoing, Batman Beyond is one of your best buys in
Well, it seems
DC.
to be a spec
Fantastic.
pick, probably because of the low print run, but because they've been having like a lot of first appearances in that
There's first
book.
appearances. There's just My wife is a huge Batman Beyond fan, and that's the number one book she reads every month.
But Dan Jurgens is good. I mean, he's really
Is.
good. He's really good at doing what you just said, making every issue matter.
Yep.
That
And
that's where he's good at. He's always been that way, though.
he
He's
has.
always had that.
And he's starting to re-architect the Nightwing, Rick Grayson stuff right now with his new Night 70, so that's exciting. And if there was one trade that I would say we would love to have more people read, would be Alan Moore Swamp Thing. If you have not read Alan Moore Swamp Thing, I would just strongly say give it a try. I was not convinced that I would like it. I knew I love Alan Moore's writing. I just didn't think I'd really get into Swamp Thing. And I fell absolutely in love with it. It is amazing, and I recommend it to anyone that I can, especially when you read it. If you look at how, and actually, it was kind of interesting. I started reading some of Tom King's Batman, and I looked at one page, and I was like, God, I've seen this page before. Where have I seen that? And I showed it to James, and I said, James, does this page look familiar? And he's like, Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Alan Moore Swamp Thing issue, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, how the hell did you know that? And he's like, I've read those things six times. He's like, it's one of my favorite runs. And I was
He's
like,
highly
okay.
influenced by the watch Alan Moore, period.
Yeah,
I mean,
Geoff Johns, too. A lot of what Geoff Johns did is all based
but
on
Tom
Alan
King
Moore.
more so, because he even loves the Watchmen grid, you know?
Yeah. And he tried to pace some of the Batman stuff like Alan Moore, and it didn't work quite as well. Because what people, if you read the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, or if you have it and you've read it before, go back and read another issue, and what you'll realize is the rhythm that Alan Moore writes in, and the way that the structure of the words are. There's some pretty cool issues where you can actually detect in the syllable beats a heartbeat. And you can start to read it, and as you go farther along in the issue, the words get shorter, the syllable beats get quicker, and the heart rate starts to pick up its pace. And then you get to the end, and it's kind of like one of those, 50s, 60s kind of TV shows where you get there at the very end of the show, and you're like, what? Whoa, 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 kind of thing. So it's a real special, unique little treasure trove.
Another one other DC question, and then I want to jump to Marvel real quick. But how is your fan base taking the new Legion? Because I found it to be like one of the weaker Legions, and I've liked what Bendis has done. And I think it's because the way I loved what he introduced with like Thorn, Rosen Thorn, like in the Millennium. Like I think it made that. Matter of fact, I read that and I was like, I gotta have her first appearance, at least her first Silver Age appearance. I couldn't afford the Golden Age, but I did. I went and grabbed it because I was just like so stoked. But since this new incarnation started, the one thing I have trouble with, and this is just my pet peeve, is when you have a team that's so big, I either like on the first page to have like a roll call. That's old
Yeah.
school, but I love the roll call. Or I like to have, when they're first introduced, that little block over it says Brainiac, you know, Super Whiz or whatever it is.
Right.
But these like digital ones that are moving, they drive me nuts, because it's like the thing moves with them. So like if he's standing sideways, well the thing that's has the Brainiac 5 is sideways. You can't even see it, and if it's backwards, it's backwards. Oh man, I find that like as an artist, it would drive me crazy. Like it was just a bad idea.
Yeah, it started off, the first issue had really good numbers and good interest, and it's waned very significantly. I think there's a lot of people that were hoping for something closer to some Silver Age Legion.
Yeah, because the thing that it's missing for me is the Legion has always been like this soap opera. Like it, and usually when they go do an adventure, it's like, okay, here's four of them, or here's five. And right now it's like this big conglomerate, and it's too big for me. And I'm not like getting introduced Plus, the costume changes were a little too drastic in some cases, and I'm still on board and I'm still enjoying it, and I'm just a little disappointed, I guess, because Bendis, for me so far, has not let me down with the other titles, like Young Justice and the Superman titles. I've been quite enjoying.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, and I thought of one more monthly title for DC that does really well for us. The Deceased, any of the Deceased books.
Oh
Those have all been
yeah,
doing really strong.
that guy's an amazing writer, though.
That's Tom Taylor, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, he is a fantastic
he's
writer.
phenomenal, especially when they let him play with the characters outside of continuity. But you know why he's good is because he gets the heart and soul of the character, and then puts him into this crazy situation. But each character, Green Arrow is Green Arrow, Batman's Batman. There's no tonal, like you get it right off the bat. Like there's no surprise in their characterization. That's what I like about Tom Taylor. He gets to
And
cut
I just
loose.
find his any of his DC and Marvel stuff that he's done, I've enjoyed all of it.
I'm gonna just marathon Marvel real quick. Can you tell me what your top five of those sellers are usually?
Sure. So for the trades, the sellers that we have in the store, the Captain America Winter Soldier trade, the Baker stuff, that's definitely a huge seller for us. We are pretty big fans of Garth Ennis, so the Punisher Max trades do very well for us because we put an emphasis on selling them. We've done really well in the last 5 years or whatever it has been since Star Wars came back to Marvel with the Star Wars, just any of their titles in general. Probably the weakest of them was in our store was Poe Dameron. But other than that, we've done very well with all of those.
Even with Dr.
And
Aphra?
oh, she's a big one for us because Ashley Witter grew up in
Oh, it's
Madison.
not, yeah, she's the
So
cover
there's a
artist.
regional, yep, there's a regional love for her. And then if I had to pick one more, what would it be? Probably, I would say the
Infinity Gauntlet?
yeah, I mean that one's just so easy because it's just been such a big thing. So yeah, I would say you could put Infinity Gauntlet, or you could put any of the Thanos books up there. Those have all done really well for us lately. Yeah.
And the monthlies.
Monthlies, definitely Venom, Immortal Hulk, Cosmic Ghost Rider. What else? Silver Surfer Black was a big one for us. That's ended. Spider-Man continues to be a good one for us.
Sounds like your
And
shop is heavy, Donny Cates.
yeah, well, I
I
think
mean,
pretty
they're
much the
into.
market is heavy, Donny Cates. And then I would say probably the Hickman written X titles do the best of all the new X titles, but all of those are still going very strong as well.
What's your second top seller for the X-Men title?
I'm trying to think here. So X-Men's really good. Marauders has
That's
been a
my
really good one.
favorite. I don't know why it is, but it's my favorite.
Yeah, a lot of people like that one, and Excalibur's been really good too. I'm trying to think. None
But
of them are really
are your
poor by
Marvel
any stretch.
are your Marvel you have more Marvel zombies now right now, right? Like more
Yeah,
people
I mean,
invested in the universe with the X-Men
oh
and
yeah. Yeah, and we do actually the Star Wars books do quite well for us too on the monthly side of things. Our store has recently started skewing probably 2 to 1 Marvel to DC. And part of it's because of the amount of titles that Marvel's putting out, but there's a lot to be said with consistency and the quality that's coming out right now from Marvel on their big books. There's some great quality and consistency coming out. Dan Jurgens on Batman Beyond. but that just isn't resonating with, people the way that Venom and Cosmic Ghost Rider and Silver Surfer Black and Jason Aaron, when he had his Thor run, we did amazing with that.
How's Donny Cates' Thor doing? Because it's
It
Donny
it
Cates.
first, yeah, the first issue came out really strong. A lot of variants too, so we had quite a few of those in the shop. Second issue was underordered by damn near everybody, did really well. Third issue was significantly underordered. Fourth issue, we've started to level off again. It's doing very, very well. I don't know why, but everybody got caught off guard on issues two and three. I think it was just because of the glut of variants that they had on the first one and people wanting those that we all kind of thought, back it off a bit. They don't have as many variants
Well,
now.
you talk about like speculation and stuff. Issue twos are kind of a big deal because of drop off, and then like the last two issues are usually expensive of any title because they're low, the print run is so doggone low. Of
Yeah, issue two and issue three tend to be
yeah.
the three tends to be the low watermark for a good title.
Yeah.
It continues to drop off if the title's not as good or not as engaging.
Right. Do you have any Image hot books now that Walking Dead is gone?
Spawn does really well for us now, but I expect over the next year that'll continue to dwindle down. But other than that, probably in our store, it centers mostly around Brubaker. So Criminal and then
Criminal.
his OGN hardcovers that he puts out, those tend to do really well. In the store itself, we don't do a whole ton of Image. It's completely died. Through mail order, I do have a number of people that get the Lazarus
Yeah.
that come out, so.
How about Boom?
Oh yeah, Boom has been the big star for us. The Something Is Killing the Children. What the heck's the other one that came out at the same time as that one?
Once Upon a Future or whatever that one is. I
Yeah,
forget.
Once in Future.
Once
Yeah.
in Future.
Yep. Yep. That one's done really well for us. They've had some of the Mirka and Delpho series
Oh
have
gosh, I
done incredibly
love the
well.
Yeah. Well, I like the other artist that does Faithless too. God, she's great.
Yep, that one with
Love,
Azarello,
I think her
that's been
name
a
is
good one.
Lavette or
Sounds right.
yeah,
Maria
something like
Lovett or
that.
something. Yeah.
Yeah, she's my new I can't think of her name now.
Your new Tula Lote?
Yeah, there you go, Tula Lute. And that was awesome that you got me that book too, because that gave me a really good memory too with me and Bill and
Glad.
Tula. So that was a good time.
I looked at
She
her line and I was like, oh, that's not going to do it for me. And I knew I had the book and I knew you loved it, so it worked out very
well,
well.
she the reason the line was so long is she spent time with each person. Like
Yeah.
it wasn't just like blowing somebody off. She would talk to you for quite a while. So it was well worth it once you got there. It was just having to deal with the people that had like 35 books that was driving me nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have a big Dynamite presence, do you?
Not too much of a Dynamite presence. We've got actually a little bit of more of one than we had typically. We're seeing pretty much anything with a Perillo cover is
And
doing really well.
he's almost doing every cover in a couple of issues of previews.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
Yeah.
doing
Between
all the cover A's almost.
Red Sonja, Vengeance of Vampirella, and
Yeah,
Vampirella. Yeah, he's pretty
Vampirella.
busy. Half the time he's doing Deja Thoris and
Well, they've been doing Jay Lee covers too.
Yep. And no, so Dynamite not as big for us. Boom, also Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh yeah.
Yep, that one's been pretty steady.
IDW.
TMNT all the way, and that's about it.
That's it.
Yep. Yeah,
That's
we're more of a either you're a superhero fan or you're kind of an indie fan. You're not, we licensed properties just don't do super well in our store.
How about those like publishers like Vault and Scout? I always they're so alike each other that
Yeah.
do they do all right?
I think for we tend to get more Vault, Scout. They tend to do more than we do with Image in the store sometimes.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, unless it's a Brubaker book, we tend to probably get more of the Scout, and Aftershock does really well in our store. So that's one that we've done incredibly well with. It didn't hurt that Joe Pruitt came out for the Garth Ennis signing, and he's done a lot of good promotional stuff for us in the store for Aftershock. So that has helped build up a nice little pocket of subscribers. So that's good.
Yeah.
The new starting startup AWA, Artists, Writers, and Artisans, man, did we all of their first issues that came out this past week, I had just humongous stacks on the tables that had to go into sub boxes and get put out in the store. So hope and fingers crossed that that keeps up, that that's the this isn't just a flash in the pan first issue thing, but
Yeah.
obviously there will be some decline.
Hopefully it's as
Hopefully
good
they'll
as
stay
what
strong.
they've advertised, 'cause they came out pretty strong advertising. And it's
Yeah, the
Axel
name they've
Alonso,
got as
so
creators,
yeah.
right? And Bill Jamas, I think, too.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm all in for sure. I like Ahoy too, but I'm not sure how they would sell.
We have is it Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man?
Yeah.
Is that one of them? Yeah, that's I think the only one that we put out on the shelf. Mail order, I sell all of their titles, not in huge numbers, but I do sell
Yeah.
all of them.
I've got Mark Russell over there with Billionaire Island and
Yep.
Second Coming.
Yep.
I like him. I really do. So I think that's all I wanted to like get across. I know you have to work tomorrow. I don't.
That's
So
right.
I decided I needed to decompress from all that's going on and just take a day.
What you gonna read?
I don't know because I'm a mood reader, but
The mood hasn't hit yet.
I've been on this weird New 52 like reading stuff
Yeah,
that I hadn't finished. And say what you will about New 52, but it did energize the comics industry for several months in
it did.
slumping time.
It did. I think it just got a little too fractured. I think
Yeah.
it's the reins were a little too loose on it, but it definitely did. Heck, it sucked me in deeper. So
Yeah.
I can't deny that.
So you want to give your contact information?
Sure. So yeah, we are on Facebook. You can find us Cowabunga Comics, Cowabunga with a K. You'll see our logo. It's a Death Star with a flying Incredicow on it. And you can hit us up there for anything you want. We're on Twitter, which we're at Incredicow, or I should say I'm at Incredicow. I'm not the best at doing Twitter, so if you don't hear from me, don't be offended. You can email me, Eric, Eric, at Cowabunga Comics, Cowabunga with a K again. Yeah, whatever you
That's
want to do.
that's probably the best bet if you want to get on the FOC lists and place an
Yeah.
order is to send you an email, right?
Yep, and I can put you on our mailing list so that you get the form or the emails that have the links to the form sent in them. FOC comes out every Friday, and the monthly order form comes out usually towards the end of the first week of the month, depending on what's going on. Sometimes it takes me a little bit longer, sometimes I get out a little quicker. But yeah, so that's kind of the structure that we have there. And you know, other than that, if you have questions about books, I will say this. If you're looking for a very obscure book, you can send me a message. Don't expect me to have it, just because obscure books are obscure for a reason. If you are looking for a $200 wall book for 50 cents, you're not going to find it. But if you're looking for it for $200, I'll have it probably. Or if you just need some fillers in your run and you're just curious if we have them, please go ahead, shoot me an email. I will go to the bins and I will dig for you and look and let you know if I have them.
Very cool. and you'll get a nice package, well packaged. I've dealt with Cowabunga before, and also if you are interested in Sit Comics or TKO, I think
Yeah.
they can go to you as well.
Absolutely. Yep. You can come right to us and we'll be more than happy to take
And
care of.
hopefully soon you'll have a bad idea.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, we will have bad idea. I will make sure to broadcast it if and when that happens.
Yeah. And you can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch. That's the best place to reach me on the Twitters. And I want to thank you again, Eric. This
My
was a
pleasure.
great discussion. And hope to see you at Heroes Con.
Absolutely. I look forward to it very much.
Yep. Take care, and you have a good Friday.
You
And
as well. Enjoy your time
be
off.
healthy too. Keep your family
I'll try
healthy.
and stay
And
that way.
yeah. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.